Welcome back to another episode of the Power of Purpose podcast with me, Julia Rogers. In this episode, I'm chatting with founder and director of Bridge Yachting, Captain Richard Bridge. Richard has commanded some of the largest expedition superyachts launched over the past 15 years, including, I've got a list here, 115-metre Polaris, 162-metre Eclipse, 96-metre Vapor 2, and 138-metre Rising Sun. And in 2004, he coordinated and executed a project to find and film the wreck of a World War II aircraft carrier at a depth of 1,000 metres in the Mediterranean Sea. He believes that people are everything in yachting, and good, honest, and authentic leadership is key to building trust, empowering great crew, and creating happy owners. In this conversation, Richard shares with me some invaluable tips and insights on what makes a great leader, and he does this with such humility and candor. I found this a very refreshing conversation with a man who really understands people and how to help them to feel heard and appreciated. So, let's get into it. Welcome, Richard, to the Power of Purpose podcast, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Julia. My pleasure, really.
So, I think your journey is extraordinary. I've done my research. Your journey from joining the Merchant Navy at age 17 to now is really rather inspiring. I mean, you've commanded some of the largest superyachts over the last 15 years, and I've got a list here. So, a new build captain of 126-metre motor yacht Octopus, 162-metre Eclipse, 115-metre Polaris, the amazing... Gosh, this boat's incredible. 96-metre is it Vava or Vava? I've got a friend that's called Vava, and I call her Vava too. 138-metre Rising Sun, and now a really skilled expedition yacht captain. I mean, what a life experience. Could you share what ignited your passion for leadership and exploration?
Yeah, certainly. I was very fortunate, I feel, growing up by the sea. Was born in a little fishing village in Cornwall called Padstow. Pretty much every day in the summer was spent on the beach or by the sea, going out on fishing boats, etc. I had a couple of uncles at sea as well, both engineers, funnily enough, and one of them used to come into to Padstow in the back in the 60s, early 70s, in a little coaster. So that was always a very exciting time to go down and see him there. And then beyond that, when I was at school, reading sort of stories of the war at sea, that sort of sparked an interest. My mother always said that I knew that I wanted to go to sea from about age 9. And I think that's pretty close to it.
So exploration was kind of in your blood. I mean, Padstow, everyone knows now of Padstow. I'm renting a house there next September, which I'm really looking forward to. It's so beautiful down there. And I wish I did grow up by the sea, but not quite Cornwall. It was in Southend-on-Sea in Essex, which wasn't quite the same. Just having a passion for, I think if you grew up near the sea, I think you always have a passion for it. And I definitely miss my vocation with not going into the maritime industry and working on board. But what about leadership? Because you've led a lot of amazing vessels. What was your, did you just build up to that, or do you feel you have a passion for leadership and supporting people?
No, I think really I didn't sort of display any sort of great leadership qualities growing up or through school. I played in sports teams, etc., and was always at a very good level. But no, I wouldn't have really called myself a leader. And I think that came more from my early days at sea and doing cadetship in the Merchant Navy. And where it's a very sort of formal rank structure, and you sort of are trained almost to be a leader in that respect. Certainly on the deck side, as because you're ultimately with the goal of becoming a captain. Mm.
And how did your days in the Navy impact that early approach to leadership? I would imagine it's very structural.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a very formal thing with a very strict rank structure, dress codes, promotion. Certainly, in those days, was very much on time served rather than merit. So it was, yeah, it was a formative in such as I saw things that I didn't like. I think I didn't like the formality. I didn't like, as certainly as a junior officer, the lack of engagement. You know, you your opinion wasn't. Seemed to be very valued very much. So it's something that sort of set my sights when I became a senior officer and eventually as captain.
But before captaining super yachts, you captained cruise ships, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I was very, very fortunate. Again, sort of right place, right time, and got my first command at 35, which certainly in those days was quite young for a passenger ship. Yeah, and that was a fantastic learning curve. It's interesting. I mean, all your time as a junior officer and even to being a senior officer, you're looking forward to that opportunity to command, and you feel as if you're ready and you know everything. But I remember very, very clearly my first day in command. We encountered a little bit of a problem when we were coming into the berth, and I instinctively turned to somebody to look for advice and realized, that's me now. So interesting.
So that's interesting. You said you're always looking for the next level, but not everybody would. So there was definitely a leader in you of thinking of climbing the ranks and climbing up to being that person.
Yeah, no, I guess so. I mean, yeah, from early days, and I think my first days on on cargo ships and moving on to cruise ships, I always had had the goal of becoming a captain, and certainly through my getting my certificates, etc., I spent more time at sea than most in many ways because I wanted to get that qualification as quickly as I could.
Yeah. Do you think your time in the Navy and then cruise ships, that sort of impacted your leadership style when you went into captaining cruise ships or super yachts?
Yeah, no, very, very much. As I said, there's it was as much seeing what the leader that I didn't want to be as seeing the leader that I did want to be. And I like to think that I various captains that I'd sail with, you would take something from each of them and try and be that person when you actually had the opportunity.
And very different from huge teams on a cruise ship to then being on a super yacht with a much smaller team. So that has to be another adjustment.
Yes, yeah, no, very much. I mean, I think the cruise background is a very good one because, because of the numbers involved, you lean very much more on your heads of department and empowering them to take responsibility and leadership. And it's something, obviously I worked on larger yachts mostly and you brought that sort of way of operating across. So when working with yacht crews, identify those key people and let them have their space. It's important, very important, not to micromanage. And particularly when I didn't, I don't have the experience that these people do. I have a good engineering knowledge, but I'm not a chief engineer. I don't have that experience. The same, on the interior, and you have to respect their experience and let them get on with it. Your job as a captain, as a leader, is to use that experience and get it all pointing in the right direction. But micromanagement is something that I've always tried very hard not to do. Working on a yacht on large yachts really wasn't too different from working on the smaller cruise ships.
Because you went on to motor sailing yachts, didn't you? Because I was looking up Windsong. I mean, what a beautiful sailboats are my passion, and what a beautiful yacht! I mean, just stunning.
Yeah, we used to call them yachts as everything called themselves yachts now, but they were very much cruise ships. But fantastic. Mm. Yeah, it was very much towards the yachting end of cruise shipping and. We used to change the itinerary. We had a degree of autonomy from the head office, so we would, if Mount Etna was erupting, then we'd change the itinerary and go and have a look at that. Or we used to sort of try to use the schedule to the advantage of making the crew something special for the guests, so which was good. You can't do that on a big cruise ship.
No, amazing, really amazing. And in 2004, you coordinated and executed a project to find and film the wreck of a World War II aircraft carrier. the depth of 1,000 meters in the Med. I mean, what an experience. And what kind of leadership skills did that require?
I still put that at the top of my list of things that I've done, I think, although it's getting a bit old now, nearly 20 years ago.
Not to me.
No, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, when I was growing up, I was reading stories of the war at sea, and I became very, very interested in it, and developed a list of ships that had been sunk during the war and not found. And top of that list was HMS Ark Royal, which is a British aircraft carrier that was involved in the sinking of the Bismarck, and was then, say, sunk herself in the Mediterranean. And I mean, it was about pulling the right team to together. I mean, first and foremost, the owner had an interest as well, and he pretty much gave me a free hand. We'd just done the Olympics in Athens with him, and he said, "Yeah, let's go and do it." So I managed through searching on the internet to find out a little bit more about the Ark Royal. And where she was, there was a British filmmaker that had thought he had found it. So I managed to get in touch with him. He was very guarded at first about sort of letting any information out, but we met up in Antibes and hatched a plan together. And then coordinating that with the owner's office, who obviously a little bit suspicious of us suddenly taking off and spending lots of money and going looking for a wreck. And then on board as well, we had some great people on board the boat, and using their experience, especially one of the second engineers had previously been an ROV pilot, which is why I hired him, because we had an ROV on board, and he knew people within the industry that we could get on board to supplement our team, and really just sort of getting everybody together and moving forward with it.
Presumably that's still out there, because my husband absolutely loves anything to do with history. So what was it called, the documentary?
Well, if you look online for Shipwreck Ark Royal, I think it's on YouTube, and you should find it. It was on the BBC. They did a couple of documentaries with us, so I've only found the one recently. Shipwreck Ark Royal, and you will see a young me with hair in a few of the shots.
Well, we should look out for that.
Well worth a
look.
Oh,
that just sounded just an amazing, amazing experience. You've mentioned micromanagement and using experience of people, but your leadership approach has clearly evolved through all of these amazing, diverse experiences. But how would you describe your core philosophy or principles today when it comes to leading teams effectively for people listening?
I think for me, the important thing is don't try to do everything yourself. Admitting to yourself that you're not the smartest person in the room, and bringing in people that cover your knowledge gaps, essentially. The other thing really is to appreciate that your experience, your history is not the only way. There are people, there are captain of super yachts who have come from different backgrounds, say from the Royal Navy or come up through yachting. And everybody brings something different and something new. Although I'm pleased and I'm proud of my route, there's a lot to be gained from other people who've had a different background, a different experience, and see things in a different way. And I think that's really important to be inclusive. You don't need to clone yourself. You need to complement what you know and what you can do.
Well, it's great awareness, because a lot of people do recruit mini me's, and that gets them into problems. But when you're looking at people's talents, I mean, when recruiting new talents, how have you gone about building those new teams? What do you look for in people?
That's interesting. I mean, honesty first and foremost. You get a lot of CVs, and you need to be sure that people are describing themselves honestly and correctly. Relevant experience, qualification. Obviously, that's a prerequisite, certainly for jobs in deck and engineering. But the most interesting thing, and something I always look at on a CV, is hobbies and what people do off duty. It tells you so much more about a person. And what they're like as a person, not just as a chief officer or a deckhand or stewardess. It's something that's always sort of stood out to me. You know, what do you want to do when you're not on duty? You know, and I think that that means gives me a lot.
That does, because you could tell from what they do is whether they're more introverted or more extroverted, and what their preferences are. If their preferences are around people, if their preferences are to be more on their own. So, like most engineers I know, you completed our LH Dynamics talent tool, and it really helps you identify what your natural inherent talents are. Most engineers are much more on the introverted side, which is lucky because they spend a lot of time in the engine room doing their stuff with their team. And most of the stewardesses are much more on the extroverted side. And I once did a training with some engineers, and they said, "Oh, those people those stewardesses are so annoying." I said, "Why are they so annoying?" It was because they're always so happy. I said, "Well, they're paid to be happy. They're the front people. They're supposed to be happy." And it kind of, when you understand when you understand people, you start to get an understanding and acceptance of each other. Hi everyone, it's Julia here. Are you moving up the leadership ranks and ready to design, develop and deliver effective training sessions on any topic? Our Train the Trainer program gives you the foundation to do just that. The course is interactive, fun and will help you grow your confidence and techniques as a trainer. For more information, head over to www.luxuryhospitalitymgm.com and visit our Leadership Courses page. Now, we're heading back to the podcast. You've mentioned a preference for working with people you've previously worked with, and something I believe isn't uncommon in the maritime industry. I come across that a lot. But how has this approach to team selection contributed to a cohesive and effective working environment for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to sort of put that together with what I said about getting different experiences. Don't shut yourself off to people. But I think, yeah, obviously, I'm been a long time working now, and worked with a lot of good people over the years. And it's really good. There's people you can trust and show some loyalty as well. You know, that's really good. But also, you know, you know how each other work, and you know your shortcomings. So you know that they can understand, you know, where they need to help you more, and vice versa, where you can help them. I think a lot, if you're working with people that you work with for many years, then a lot goes unsaid, and it's just a sort of a natural flow of communication. But saying that, yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to block out, you know, bringing in people and new experience, because that's very important as well. Something that's often talked about with recruiting and hiring is longevity, and certainly from an owner's point of view, you know, they're looking for longevity because they like familiar faces, and also it gets expensive replacing crew. And I mean, longevity is a very, very important thing, but you can also get very, very stale as well, and end up with a very stale crew. So, you know, there is a natural progression is not necessarily a bad thing. And bringing in some new life and new ideas, and that is a good thing.
You mentioned something there, very, very important, the word trust. That's what I was, you know, if you trust people, you can let them get on with it. And if you know that they're good at their job and they're utilizing their talents, you can trust that they're going to do their job so you can get on with yours. But, you know, leading a crew of 76 individuals on the Eclipse, I mean, it's a significant responsibility. How do you create that sense of unity and purpose among such a large and diverse team and motivate them?
I think it's fairly simple, and you have to realize, they have to realize that that we're all working towards a single goal, which is to keep the owner happy, and that makes it fairly easy. In that, there's because of the nature of vessels and, say, rank structure, etc. There tends to be a feeling that, you know, one crew member is more important than another crew member, but I've always tried to instill that that's really not the case. You know, the most important crew member at any particular time is the person who's on the front line. You know, could be the laundryman who's ironing the owner's favorite shirt, or the stewardess who's serving breakfast, you know, or any one of us. You know, we all have a job to do. We all play a part within that team. And it's really important that, you know, people recognize that and also help each other as well. You know, if you see something that's wrong, even if it's not your part of ship, you know, I've always said that if you see a spill on deck, coffee, spill on the deck or something, you know, don't just walk past it, get it sorted, make sure, that the right person knows about it and follow it through. You know, the last thing you want to do is the owner to walk past and see that. So you have to sort of create a total responsibility for everybody for everything, driving towards the same goal, and that's really really important. Team building as well, yeah, absolutely. I used to organize sort of runs and hikes and try and encourage a healthy lifestyle on board, and that I think is you know, generally appreciated as well, to have some, you know, team building fun things to do as well.
Yeah, incredibly important, that the bonding. But yeah, well, could you share something? You've been to some incredible places. Could you share an experience that you've done something with your team that stands out?
There's a lot. You know, I mean, I've been extremely fortunate to work for some great owners who looked after their crew as well. I think probably one of the most memorable in my for me, we were heli skiing in Alaska, and we were actually skiing around a volcano, a volcanic island, and basically following the sun around the island as the snow softened up.
Sounds terrible.
So the guests were up in the helicopter, and it was rough. Oh. Yeah, and towards the end of the morning, the guests who'd been there all week heli skiing were getting a bit tired, so started coming back by helicopter, and the owner was straight on the phone to me. He said, you know, if there's any crew out there who you know, on board who snow or ski board, get them up here now. So we started sort of, as the guests were coming back, running the crew up onto the volcano, and I was busy on board trying to arrange their departure later in the day, getting a seaplane to take the luggage back to the airport and stuff. And then he called me again. He says, where are you? And he said, get up here now. Oh god, I'm in trouble. But no, he just wanted me to join in and go snowboarding as well. So, yeah, absolutely phenomenal. And then at the end, when they left, he said, "Right, you know, at the once we've all gone, then, you know, any crew who didn't get to go up the volcano, you know, take him up there for drinks." So we had a little party on the top of a volcano as the sun was going down in the remote area in Alaska. It's little things like that. Yeah, mean so much.
Amazing.
And I think seeing an owner enjoy the boat like that, it's of course we work for money, for a salary, and that's important, and we like to have leave, but itineraries like that, and having the opportunity to do that sort of thing, that's a great one for crew retention, I can tell you.
Yeah. Yes. Well, really striking it lucky, getting on a boat like that with an owner like that and a captain like you, who you know, is keen for people to join in and have and enjoy the experience with them. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
But so if you're looking at leading these large crews, which you have, so that obviously means a lot. There's a lot of people look up to you, I would imagine, almost as a mentor, but I always ask people this: have you ever had a mentor? Is there somebody that you can pinpoint as has guided you along your way?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I said, I you know, had several captains, mostly that I worked with, and you'd take a piece from each, and one in particular, actually on the QE2, where I was first officer, and he was extremely good with crew. You know, he really, really took time and inquired after people. He did his research. You know, he knew that his cabin steward was married with three children in the Philippines, and he really sort of took time to know and to learn the crew. But he was still a very imposing, commanding presence. He was, I think, about 2 meters tall, so that's probably why. But he managed to sort of to couple that respect with a kindness and an approachability, and that made a big difference for me. The other person, interestingly, was an owner, who taught me a lot and pushed me to get the best from myself. Yeah, you know, we can all be a little conservative at time, and but he really sort of helped me and pushed me to get the best from myself and from the crew as well. And I learned a lot from him.
I think that this your generation or my generation and anybody that's older, they didn't feel the capability of going to find somebody. It normally came from someone else. Whereas now I think youngsters today, they look for a mentor. I was talking to a lady called Dagmar Sims, and we were saying about how important mentorship is. And a mentor can be just around you somewhere. It may be a family member, it may be a friend, it could be anybody that has got that wisdom and guidance that you could lean on and just reach out to and ask them some advice and help. And I think youngsters are much more like that nowadays. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, you're almost discouraged in a way from showing any feelings or any need. And I think that it's a much better world in which we live in, because you are encouraged to share and to ask for help.
Mm.
And I'd say I probably still struggle with that, to be honest. You know, having grown up when I did. But it is, it's very important to I think reveal your weaknesses in many ways and talk it through and get help from people. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Well, we've talked about this amazing experience, and you've led expeditions to remote and challenging locations, which can be very stressful. So how do you personally, as a leader, manage stress? And what are there any strategies that you employ to ensure your team operates efficiently or in demanding conditions? Anything that you can share?
I must admit, on a personal point of view, I've always enjoyed exercise, and most especially running, because you just need a pair of shoes and you're away, and cycling to a degree as well. And I would, certainly going back to my cruise ship days, you had a fairly sort of set routine of arriving in ports maybe 6 in the morning and then leaving again sort of in the evening. And I would always find time within my day just to put on my running shoes and go out for a run. It's great to see a bit more of the port and of the area, and it's just a great way to clear your head and do a lot of thinking about sometimes work, but very often stuff other than work, and take yourself away from the environment. And I always try to sort of get that into to cruise as well. I remember on Eclipse, we'd be anchored in St. Bart's for sort of quite extended periods, and there's some lovely runs there. And I'd say, okay, put it on the notice board or put it out that there'd be a tender ashore at 6:30 for anybody that wanted to go for a run. And we'd sort of get dropped in the town and then run up to one of the beaches and then have a little swim, and then tender would bring us back again. So that sort of thing. I really encourage people to physical exercise is great, a great de-stressor. But otherwise, just try and take some time out of your day when you can.
I mean, if we look at well-being and mental health, that's very much part of life at the moment. And today we've got lots of people looking out for, particularly people in the yachting industry, when they are very confined on small yachts. Well, I was very, very fortunate last week. I was invited, a friend of mine has just bought a 34-meter beautiful yacht, motor yacht. And I was actually experienced it as a guest for a change, rather than being a trainer on board. And but the, there were 6 crew, and they worked non-stop, and we were at anchor most of the time. So it's not a big yacht where there's a gym. There's not they didn't get off the boat very often, probably I think twice they got off the boat. And So I think, how do they keep them their exercise up in a small yacht like that, and a relatively small yacht? And how do they keep their mental health if they're not on rotation, if they're away from their families? Difficult. I mean, it really gave me an insight into that kind of smallness, you know, of being on there.
Yes. Yeah. No. Very. Very much. And I mean, it's a good thing with smaller boats is generally they're a single season, or you know, they will have time sort of beyond the season to get some downtime. But yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, even with my experience doing a long trip, you know, 6-8 weeks intensive through the summer, or then it was, yeah, it's very hard to find time sometimes to for people to have a break. But it is really important. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's good that owners, I think, are beginning to realize that.
I think it's just even to them, I did say to them, can you get up early and go for a swim? And they said, we're so tired, we just need those extra few minutes in bed. And when you watch how hard they work, you can really understand that their downtime in their bunk is really, really important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
But you've extensive time on expedition yachts, and it's led you to incredible global exploration. And what I've been hearing just this short conversation is that you're very real and authentic. And I think that people buy into that and trust people that are authentic and real. So what would your tips be on leading authentically? I mean, you're a natural, I can see that, but what would your tips be?
For me, be yourself. Absolutely. You know, be yourself, be true to yourself. Don't try and be somebody else, some big, well, from my side, you know, don't know, I don't want to be all authoritarian, but yeah, you know, just be yourself, be kind and understanding, you know, try and remember what it was like for you when you were a junior crew member, and how you felt, how other people made you feel at that time in your career. And I think that's really important. Don't be officious for the sake of being officious. You know, there are times when you have to lay down the law, you know, emergency situation, for instance, when you know what you say has to go, but otherwise, yeah, you need to be approachable and honest with people as well. That's really important.
And allow them to speak up.
Yes.
Just be able to have a voice. And but there are lots of leaders that feel the need to control. So I think they find it hard to just be themselves, and because they feel they have to have this mask on to have that control. But you can shift, can't you?
Yeah.
You can shift to understanding people more and working with people more and understanding their differences.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I take the sort of the example from my situation, you know, being in command on the bridge when you're, you know, navigating in and out of port, which people think is the most important thing we do, but actually it's looking after crew. It's the most important thing we do. But anyway, yeah. One thing I've always tried to stress to the, you know, the bridge team was, you know, yes, I'm in command, but I need your help. I cannot see everything. You know, my view might be different to yours. Don't be afraid to shout, put your hand up and say, have you seen this? Have you done this? Yeah, it needs to be very much a collaborative effort. And there have been far too many accidents, incidents, disasters where, you know, the people wouldn't question the captain's authority. And it's really important that you enable and empower your team to be able to question your authority without fear of being slapped down. Yeah, it's very important.
So how would you describe enabling and empowering your team?
I tell them absolutely, say, look, you know, I'm I've got a lot of experience, but I don't know everything. And it's only if you have a different way or a better way of doing it, let me know, and we'll take it on. Yeah, as I said, you know, I've learned my trade in a certain way, but I'm very open to people with different ideas. And you know, I think something that really annoyed me when I was sort of junior officer and coming up through the ranks was you know, this is the way we've always done it. You know, it's always been this way, and I hate to hear that. You know, I want to hear, hey, you know, have you tried this? You know, and we try it and it doesn't work, it's rubbish. Say, okay, well, yeah. But you need to be open to different ideas and suggestions, and you need to make sure that the crew, your crew, feel enabled to put them forward.
Do you feel that, I'm just listening to what you're saying, and I think curiosity comes in there. Do you feel that you're a curious leader?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm always very aware of my own frailties, where I could do better, and I think that's important as well. You know, I can look back at times where I have been too confident in my own ability. And yeah, I'm probably much more aware now of where my shortfall is.
I'm just listening to you. You sound like you are very interested in people, and the way you get that is by being curious about them and finding out more about them and really understanding them.
Yeah, people are everything in yachting. Certainly, you know, they are your biggest nightmare, but also your greatest savior. You know, it's how a boat feels and how it works is all about the crew at the end of the day. And you know, it's important that they are on side and understand it.
And showing your vulnerability draws people in, doesn't it? So if you can be vulnerable, to show that vulnerability as a leader, and show that you can fail and you might not be able to do something as well as others, but learning from failure is something that we all must master if we want to become successful leaders. So have you ever experienced failure?
Without giving particular examples, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, there are things when things have gone wrong, and but you learn from it, absolutely. And I've always, you know, before every trip, every guest trip, I used to have a crew meeting and just sort of, you know, give them the basic details of guests coming and what we're doing, where we're going. But also just to reinforce a few points, and probably one of the biggest of them was that, you know, things will go wrong. That's life. Things will happen that are beyond our control or even within our control. And it's not, you know, once something's happened, it's done. It's finished. We need to move on. And it's about how we recover and how we learn from our mistakes that makes us what we are. And it's really important not to dwell, but to learn and to make things better. It's a really important thing, I think.
And do you encourage team collaboration with that, to talk about it? If something does go wrong, do you encourage that kind of collaboration of ideas of how you can move forward and how you can change things?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So important, you know, not to dwell and finger point, but, you know, in a, essentially a no blame culture, I think, is really important. Yeah, it's if things went wrong, then, you know, you generally would we'd have a head of department's meeting, you know, pretty much every day, and if there was an issue, then we'd talk it through and try and find the best way to resolve it and stop it from happening again.
And you've worked with or you've mentioned inclusion earlier on, and you've worked with lots and lots of diverse teams. If you think about emerging leaders now, what advice would you give to emerging leaders to really, who are passionate about making a positive impact with embracing diversity and inclusion, which is really, really important, particularly nowadays?
I think, as I said, you know, you need to be yourself. You need to be kind and to be understanding, and not to forget how you felt in earlier stages of the career. But don't take yourself too seriously either. You know, what we're doing is not we're not saving lives, we're not doing anything dramatic, and I think you need to sort of see where you are, step back, see where you are, and not take it all too seriously, and don't let power go to your head. You know, power corrupts. It's really important that you sort of can understand other people's point of view, and don't let it go to your head.
But looking ahead, what changes do you think we might see in the yachting industry?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I think, you know, sort of on a technical side, definitely alternative fuels, greener policies, and that is really, really important. And a part of that is a worry that that yachting is seen negatively by a lot of people, and certainly by the next generation. So yeah, that is a worry that it will discourage the next generation from owning yachts because your ownership is seen so negatively. I think if anything from that, there is more of a swing towards research and exploration vessels that are seen not so much as status symbols, but as tools for exploration and doing good around the world. And a lot of owners are pivoting towards that, and I think that will become much more of a norm for your ownership. Where yes, the beneficial owner will have use of the yacht and go to these great, wonderful places, but they will be doing so with a purpose, and for exploration and for expanding on scientific research. And we're seeing this more and more.
Oh, and so much, just amazing. I would have thought to be that kind of owner with an exploration yacht to go and experience these amazing places around the world, and also give to the communities that you're going, that you arrive at, that you're visiting.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate again with owners to have been able to do this already. We were in the Galapagos, and you're not generally allowed to use the helicopter in the Galapagos, but we hooked up with the science team there through the agents, and we repositioned I don't know how many thousand baby tortoises up into the mountains with a helicopter, and then went out with a couple of guards from the island to depopulate some non-indigenous cattle that had escaped, and at the same time managed to give a nice treat of fresh meat to one of the local villagers. Yeah, there are lots of things we can help with, I think.
Is there one place that really sticks out in your mind as being the best place you've ever visited?
Ooh, it's tricky. I think Far Reach is a great for me, and Antarctica was fantastic because it stands alone. It's amazing. But overall, I think Alaska probably more than anywhere else. Yeah, it's just stunning location.
Just stunning, just because of the vastness of it and what's there.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of cruise ship activity up there these days, but there are still an awful lot of places that the cruise ships, etc., don't go to. And at the other end of the world, Patagonia, for similar reason. Yeah, just fantastic location, remote.
That's on my bucket list.
Amazing.
I really want to go to Patagonia. Yes.
It's fantastic.
I haven't been to the Galapagos yet, and I want to go there and then go across to Buenos Aires and then go down to Patagonia. That's one of my sort of bucket list to do.
Well, that sounds like a good itinerary, yeah.
And also Antarctica, that would be amazing. But what can we expect to see from bridge yachting now? Tell me more about bridge yachting.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah. I mean, we're helping a limited number of owners, and really we'll just sort of keep trying to do our best for the owners and encourage them to enjoy their yachts and expand their horizons. I'd say we push this model of exploration and sustainability, and really that's what we hope to do with the owners.
And are you aware of more boats being built in that vein to be more exploration yachts?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're working on a project at the moment along those lines, which is great for an owner that we've been working with. So I think it's a good way forward.
And like you say, with the younger generation coming through, it's not only younger generation buying yachts, but it's also younger generation being recruited onto yachts, because if they don't agree that the yacht isn't being run the way they, I mean, there are lots of people who just go for the buck, but if they really have a mindset of they want to look after the planet, they're more likely to go onto a yacht that is doing good work rather than something that's just not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it in that way, but yeah, very much. And as I say, with the the world cruising that we did and having such a great itinerary, that sort of goes hand in hand with that people with a bit more understanding and appreciation of the planet.
Mm. We've got a recurring question that we always ask as the last one, Richard. What one lesson have you learned that you'd like to leave behind for our listeners?
I think don't get too caught up in what you're doing. Take a step back at least once a day and look at the big picture and how amazing the world is. You know, sometimes when, goodness me, I know I was dealing with accounts or a crew issue or something on the boat, I would just take a walk outside out of my office and just walk down the deck and look and see where you are and take a deep breath and say, wow, you know, it's amazing. It does help with being in some amazing places, I must say. But yeah, even just looking out over the sea sometimes and yeah. Fantastic. Go out at night, look up at the stars, take it all in. Yeah, I think you just have to pull back from the here and now, and yeah, don't get too caught up in what you're doing.
I love that. Just take yourself away and look, because we don't look, a lot of times we don't look up. We were out walking this morning and with the dogs, and you're normally just walking with them just running in front of you, and I looked up and there was mist over the trees and the sky was just full of color, just really, really beautiful. And I had to stop. I actually stopped and take a photograph, but you can't really tell it on a photograph, but it's just looking up and seeing where you are can really change your mindset and lift your energy. So thank you very much for that, Richard.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Thank you. And I wish you every success with bridge yachting and more exploration.
Thank you very much, Julia. Lovely to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.